La pendule fait tic-tac, tic-tic. Les oiseaux du lac pic-pac, pic-pic. Glou, 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 font tous les dindons. Et la jolie cloche ding-ding-don. Mais boum, quand notre cœur fait boum, tout avec lui dit boum. Et c'est l'amour qui s'éveille.
Rugby friends, and welcome to a new edition, finally, of French Rugby Connections with moi, Véronique Lindieu, and
the very elusive Mike Pierce.
Indeed, indeed, Mike. I was saying to you earlier, it's been 4 weeks since we last time spoke. You know, we had a big hiatus between our last program.
I know. It's amazing, isn't it? I don't know where the time's gone. So much happening.
Oh, top 14 is going crazy. It's so exciting. We don't know what will happen. But before we talk about the top 14, let me tell you, I had a really, really conversation this morning with Eric Chan.
Oh, wow.
Exactly. So Eric Chan.
Oh,
brilliant. Such a nice guy. And you know what? Sean Fitzpatrick did say Champ was one of his toughest opponents.
Yeah,
and Nick Parr-Jones, even better, said Champ was a thug. Dirty on the pitch and lovely off it.
Yeah, scary looking guy. I once bumped into him in a restaurant in Cardiff. And, you know, he looked just as frightening off the pitch as he did on it. But as you say, very nice guy, you know, away from the field of play.
For our listeners, so who is Eric Chan? Well, he was born on the 8th of June 1962. He played for Toulon and became the owner of Toulon as well. Before Morat took over, he was capped 42 times and he played as flanker. And he won the Grand Slam 1987 and was in that quarter final in 1991 against England. And we tell us some more about that. And his nom de guerre, his war name was the Godfather, but a really, really nice guy. And he's got something in common with me.
What, he's a thug? What's that? What's he going?
He mentioned to me that his wife actually is from Brittany. You know, she was born in Brest, but the parents, you know, moved to Toulon when she was younger. Yeah, but a lovely, lovely person, very smiling. And I only had half an hour with him, but he was so kind. You know, I spent an hour with him. And I have to say a big, big, big thank you to Tom Dixon, who was very kind to be the translator.
Brilliant. Oh, let's hear it. Let's hear
it. Yeah. Hi, Eric Chan. What a legend. I have to tell you, I was going through my research, obviously, before my interview with you, and I saw that iconic picture between you and Mickey Skinner, taken on the 19th of October 1981 during the World Cup quarterfinal. Can you tell me about that game? And are you still in touch with, what is his surname? It's Mikey the Munch, I believe.
Mikey the Munch.
Exactly. Donc, monsieur, vous avez compris.
J'ai compris le coup de tête. Il me manque tout le reste.
Okay, I understood in your question the word Skinner. I understood the part about our heads knocking together, but that's all I can remember.
What do you remember of that quarterfinal? How did you feel? Because for the English, you know, it was very much one pivotal match. Will Carling said that it was very violent, you know, there was lots of pressure in Prince, the Parc des Princes. Donc, je disais, quels étaient vos pressentis, vos souvenirs par rapport à ce match? Parce que lorsque j'ai fait de la recherche hier, j'ai vu par exemple des commentaires de Will Carling qui disait que ce match, c'était vraiment un match très violent, où il y avait beaucoup, beaucoup de pression. C'était assez agressif.
Alors, d'abord, je ne sais pas si on y reviendra, mais je ne sais pas pourquoi on entretient les Français une relation particulière avec le peuple anglais. Je ne parle pas des Gallois, des Irlandais, des Écossais qu'on aime aussi par-dessus tout, mais on aime les Anglais aussi parce que, en tous les cas, moi, bien sûr pour des questions de rugby, parce que c'est eux qui l'ont inventé. Et c'est l'une des raisons pour lesquelles on les a laissés gagner en 1991. Des raisons pour lesquelles on les a laissés gagner. On pouvait pas, il fallait que, quand même, ils fassent la finale de la Coupe du Monde chez eux. Mais bon, parce que l'histoire a montré que quand même ce peuple, c'est un grand cousin, et moi j'ai une admiration sans borne pour ce peuple d'Angleterre, et je me souviens, remember, je me souviens de plein de choses, de plein de livres d'histoire. Donc ça, c'est la première des choses, et je trouve d'ailleurs dommage que quelquefois les journalistes, parce qu'ils ont besoin de vendre du papier, se laissent aller à des histoires dans lesquelles ils voudraient nous emmener, et pour lesquelles je n'ai pas très envie d'y aller, parce que voilà, j'ai une grande admiration pour ces gens-là, que ce soit pour le rugby ou pour la façon dont ils sont, leur pragmatisme, enfin, ainsi de suite. Je ne suis pas là pour faire de la politique, je n'en fais pas, mais je tenais quand même à le dire. Une fois qu'on a dit ça, je vais revenir à ce match. Oui, il y avait de la pression, parce qu'il y avait de la violence, pas plus que d'autres matchs, parce que, qu'on le veuille ou non, le rugby est un sport de combat, hein, donc le rugby appelle violence. C'est vrai que quelquefois, on a pu sortir un peu de ce qui pourrait être autorisé, surtout à ce niveau-là. Mais là aussi, je reviens à mon introduction, les Anglais ont été magistraux, puisqu'ils avaient mis le plan anti-Blanco. Et alors, il faut que je raconte une histoire extraordinaire concernant le plan anti-Blanco, parce que effectivement, il y a cet affrontement avec Skinner, je me souviens plus son prénom, vous allez pouvoir...
Mike.
Avec Mike. Je viens d'ailleurs rencontrer et pour boire une bière avec lui, et profiter de Tom, de traducteur, et refaire le monde.
D'accord.
Et il y a bien eu cette... Il faut que je m'arrête.
Oui, peut-être pour donner le temps à Tom à traduire.
Ah oui.
Okay. Well, firstly, as an introduction, I don't know where this came from, this story that France is always against England. We have a respect, we like them. The English invented rugby, and that's why we let them win in 1995, because they had to have the final, the home final. There's a great admiration I have for the English without limits. And I'm not saying that to be political, it is that journalists like to push the story that there is an enmity between France and England. Mm-hmm. But that match, yes, of course there was pressure. The violence, I can't remember them being any more violence than normal. It's a sport of combat, it's proper rugby. Of course we pushed the limits a little where we could, everyone does. And the English were very smart in their way of playing. They came up with an anti-Blanco plan, targeting Serge Blanco, and they won the match.
Right. Merci Tom, merci. Alors, deux sujets. La Coupe du Monde 95, moi je pars avec un grand ami qui malheureusement nous a quittés, qui était un très grand joueur, qui a joué contre les Anglais, qui s'appelle Eric Melville, là, et qui était mon frère d'armes, hein, à Toulon, quelquefois en équipe de France. On part en 95 en Afrique du Sud pour voir la Coupe du Monde. Et alors, ce qui était très rigolo, c'est que le lancement de la Coupe du Monde, c'était deux rhinocéros qui couraient l'un vers l'autre, s'affrontaient. Au moment où ils se donnaient un coup de casque, ils mettaient la photo, la fameuse image, où je suis tête à tête avec Skinner. Donc ça m'a valu dans les bars sud-africains. Les Sud-Africains, à tout prix, voulaient me filer ce qu'on appelle en France un coup de casque pour voir si j'étais toujours solide, comme je l'avais été par rapport à ce moment. Ça, c'est la première des histoires, et je ne sais pas si Tom veut la traduire, je te dirai ma deuxième histoire après.
Oui, oui. Dites-moi, c'est quoi son nom? J'avais entendu David Melville.
Oui.
Eric Melville. Qui a été international et qui était un grand joueur. Très grand. Tu pourras regarder, Tom, faire un peu de recherche sur lui.
Oui, je vais trouver ça. Merci. OK. Certainly, the memories of the 95 World Cup always comes up with the photo of me head to head with Mike Skinner. So much so that when I went to South Africa on tour with Eric Merville, The locals in the bars were tapping my head to check that it was all still intact.
Alors la deuxième histoire, c'est ce même match. C'est ce même match. Il y a quelques photos. Je les ai mis d'ailleurs dans l'hôtel que je viens d'acheter, de restaurer. J'ai mis ces deux photos d'ailleurs, celle où j'ai Skinner et l'autre où je soutiens Serge Blanco. Et l'ailier titulaire numéro 14, vous trouverez le nom mieux que moi, Véronique, vient pour faire un plaquage à retardement sur Serge Blanco. Et c'est vrai que là, je ne sais pas comment ça se fait, il vient et il s'encastre sur mon poing. Moi, je ne voulais pas lui donner un coup de poing, mais...
Oh, inconvenient.
Sa tête vient sur mon poing. Et il tombe, et il est remplacé. Quelques années après, pour du business, j'avais des business à Lyon, je suis à Lyon, et là, il y a des gens qui dirigent la Fédération européenne de rugby qui rentrent dans le restaurant où j'étais avec mes collègues de travail. Et bien sûr, ils viennent me saluer parce qu'on est le monde du rugby, on se connaît, et ils me demandent de les rejoindre après le dîner, ce que je fais avec grand plaisir. Et là, le directeur général de cette institution européenne du rugby prend la parole en français, aussi bien que Tom, et dit, voilà, je voulais remercier Eric parce que, bon, il faudra retrouver le nom, parce que mes X sélections, je lui dois. Bon, j'ai dit, c'est quand même la première fois où un Anglais me remercie. Et en fait, je me souviens plus son nom, mais vous le retrouverez, le numéro 14, donc, quand il est venu s'engastrer sur mon poing, tombe sonné, sort, il est remplacé par ce joueur, qui ensuite a fait une carrière formidable, a été champion du monde avec des Anglais. Non, a fait la finale, pardon, je ne sais pas s'il a été champion du monde. Et quelques années après, il était directeur général de la Fédération européenne de rugby, mais vous retrouverez les noms mieux que moi. Donc, je suis ravi d'avoir fait la carrière j'espère pas arrêter la carrière de l'ailier numéro 14, mais en tous les cas, avoir lancé ce jeune garçon qui ensuite a été à la destinée du rugby européen.
Parfait, ouais. Parfait,
tout
Tom.
Ça est vrai, tout ça est vrai.
Oui,
So that match, the World Cup quarterfinal, I'm remembered for the head-to-head with Skinner, but there was also another moment where the English winger performed a late tackle on the base Serge Blanco, which was a bit naughty, and we didn't like it, and somehow he ended up knocking his head against my innocent fist. And knocking himself out, heaven forfend. So following this, he was taken off, and a young replacement came on as number 14. And this young replacement, at number 14, went on for a glittering career and ended up thanking me at a European rugby dinner for launching him in his newfound career.
Il est resté et a fait toute sa carrière.
Ah, d'accord.
Moi, je ne l'ai plus jamais rencontré. C'est celui qui l'a remplacé, mais Tom est en train de faire des recherches. Et j'ai sûrement trouvé ça, quoi.
D'accord.
Heslop est né en 63, donc il est un peu plus vieux. Ça aurait pu être son dernier match.
Donc, c'était en 95.
Parce que moi, je suis de 62, donc ça ne pouvait pas être.
Ah oui, et c'est bientôt votre anniversaire. It's soon your birthday.
C'est dans un mois.
C'est pas gentil.
Oui, 50 ans, 50 ans plus 10, 50 plus 10.
On va dire, c'est 50 ans hors taxe en France. Comme en France, on a beaucoup de taxes, c'est plus de 50 ans hors taxe.
Super.
Brilliant. So, Mike, top 14.
Hey, there's only two games left. You know, it's incredible. And there's still eight teams that can qualify for the knockout stages. Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating... Of course, unfortunately, now we've got a break for the Euros. But some interesting facts. Castra are the only team unbeaten at home so far. They've played 12 at home, won 11 and drawn 1. Bordeaux have won the most away games. They've won 6 out of 12. And Biarritz and Brive are the only teams that haven't won a single away game. So,
Oh, how interesting. I wasn't aware of this. But one team who really, really was on a roll right now, and it brings me a big smile because I spoke with Eric Chan this morning, yeah, is Toulon. Toulon is on a roll.
Yeah, you know, they've turned it over, haven't they?
Completely since March, you know, because they were a bit like Montpellier last year. Do you remember when Montpellier was really suffering? And they won, I think, 8 of the 10 games, I believe.
Yeah, exactly. The last 2 weekends, they've beaten the top two, Bordeaux and Montpellier, in successive weekends. So, I mean, that's incredible, isn't it?
Yes, and before that, they won against La Rochelle, Toulouse, Clermont.
Incredible, so, incredible turnaround.
So, absolutely amazing. So anything could happen. And yeah, it looks like Franck Azema, who started being the coach at the beginning of season, is finally, finding his feet and working his machine there.
They've had a lot of injuries as well, haven't they, to be fair? And, you know, unfortunately, now this team is probably starting to play well, and there's a lot of players going. Parise, of course, is probably retiring.
Carbonell, yeah, but it's like, what, 72 years old, something like that?
Yeah, I know. It's still play. I tell you what, he was still outstanding at the weekend. Incredible player.
Yes, because they played, you were right. I mean, they played, actually, they went to Chabon d'Almas.
Yeah.
And they won against Bordeaux Bègles. The final score was 16-29. And yeah, incredible. Which other games did you watch?
Clermont, they beat Stade Francais 29-16.
I believe it was 29-26, Mike.
Sorry, that's what I mean. Yeah, that's what did I say? 29.
You said 29-16.
Oh, that's my brain. Yeah, I've got it written down as 29-26 as well. But yes, so Clermont just out of the reckoning. They've left it too late now. They're down in ninth and can't make up ground.
Happy for Stade Francais, because I was looking at the highlight of top 14 on YouTube. And they did ramp up in second half, so well done, Stade Francais.
And of course, the big one, or what, you know, was certainly one of the big games, was Toulouse against La Rochelle. You know, familiar foes, played in the top 14 final last year and the European final this year, last year as well. Toulouse, they beat La Rochelle 23-16, and Toulouse in sixth. You wouldn't have thought that at the beginning of the season. La Rochelle in seventh. So either of those teams could miss out. You know, it's really going to go down to the wire.
I know. That's why it's so exciting.
Yeah.
I mean, if Netflix could do a series about the top 14 now, that would be a good time. Definitely. Yeah. And other games, so Perpignan versus Brive. So the score was 27-10.
They're going to have to play off, aren't they? Or Brive, depending on who finishes second from bottom. But sadly, Biarritz, who lost to Castres, they are doomed now to go down to the Pro de Deux.
Yes, and they played against Cast this weekend. Yeah. They lost 13-48. Cast dominated that game with 7 tries. I'm afraid it's au revoir for Biarritz.
Absolutely.
Other games that took place, well, Lyon versus Montpellier, 43-20. You know, here, Philippe Saint-André said at the end of the game, "We've had better days." Being very British in his approach. Aouaz got a red card before halftime. Paul Williams said damage is the ligament is off. That, won't play anymore.
Interesting that both first and second lost Montpellier and Bordeaux, and either one of those has been top of the top 14 since December. So interesting to see they both lost.
Yes. Then Paul against Racing 92. Paul got annually hated by Racing. You know, it was 21-42. And in the last 18 minutes, they conceded 22 points. So anything can happen in the top 14. And Grégory Altrit mentioned that c'est un top 14 de fou. It's a crazy top 14 right now. So
only 7 points separate the top seven. So it really is. I can't ever remember, you know, with two matches to go, it being this this competitive. And, you know, some big games coming up on the 21st of May and the 4th of June, which are the final 2 weekends before the barrage.
Correct. And you know what, Mike, is that, you know, Toulon was lagging at the bottom of top 14 a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Might get lucky and might get into the top six. They're only, I believe, 3 points away from their rival, from the one being above them. So
yeah, and they've, you know, they've got to play Po at home and Racing away. So, you know, yeah, who knows? They might just make it through.
Definitely. So can you tell us, our listeners, the ranking of the top 14?
Absolutely.
As of now.
Absolutely. In first place at the moment, Montpellier on 69 points. Second place, Bordeaux-Bègle with 67 points. In third place, also on 67 points, but with a worse points difference, is Cast. In fourth place with 66 points is Racing, 92. Fifth place, Lyon, 63. Sixth place, Toulouse, 62. La Rochelle also on 62, but in seventh place. And then Toulon in eighth with 59 points. So, you know, as I say, either of those eight could make the knockout stages. And then below that, ninth, Clermont with 57. 10th, Pau with 50. 11th, Stade Francais with 50. In 12th place, Brive with 42 points. 13th place, Perpignan on 39. And way down in 14th, Biarritz with 24 points.
Exactly. I don't think we've ever seen that.
I certainly can't recall. Normally by now, the top six are pretty much done and dusted. But and of course, Toulouse, Montpellier and Racing have got big European games to come as well. So will that affect their top 14 challenge?
To be continued. So, Mike, what's happening in the European Cup?
Well, this weekend is the quarterfinal stage of the Heineken Champions Cup and the Challenge Cup. Big French presence. In fact, on Saturday, the quarterfinals of the Champions Cup, Munster are at home to Toulouse. La Rochelle are at home to Montpellier, an all-French clash there. And then on Sunday, Racing 92 are at home to Sale. And of course, the other match, quarterfinal match, doesn't feature any French clubs. That's Leicester against Leinster. And then in the Challenge Cup quarterfinals, Lyon are at home to Glasgow on Saturday and Toulon at home to London Irish on Sunday. So, yeah, once again, a huge French presence in the last eight of the European competitions.
The final is due to take place in Marseille.
Yeah, that's going to be a cracking weekend. So the finals of both competitions are in Marseille on the 27th and the 28th of May.
Woohoo! So it's finally happening. No COVID.
Yeah. I know. Yeah, it's been postponed, hasn't it? As you say, for COVID reasons. So that'll be a great weekend.
Definitely. If you can, for our British friend, if you can spend some time longer than a weekend, so you can visit the area as well. Oh gosh, Mike, we have to talk about that one. The women's rugby Six Nations final on Saturday between France versus England.
Yes, England just seem to go on and on, don't they?
Tough
team.
Yes. So a few things here. I think the preparation for the English, as you know, they're fully professional. When they arrive in France, from what I've read, you know, they used the few days they were in France as bonding exercise. They went out, they had some nice coffee, had some nice patisserie and so on. So obviously, they did them homework. And if you compare the French side, you know, that game meant so much to them. And they did some really
tough training, I believe on a Wednesday. You know, it was very, very tough. From, again, from my sources, it started really well with France scoring its first try after 4 minutes, I believe. I think it was
four minutes.
By
Roman Manager.
Exactly, but then it went downhill.
Well, you know, the professionalism does make a big difference, because England have been professional for a number of years now. And having that full-time training and recovery, I mean, you can see it with Wales, who have been dismal in the Women's Six Nations the last couple of years. They've only been professional for a few months, but, you know, they ended up coming third. And they've made massive improvements in that short space of time. So the only way France are going to be able to compete with England, I think, is to go full-time. Because England are still pushing the boundaries, you know, they're getting better and better. And France are catching up.
So you may have heard me, but I was invited to have a chat with Philippa Toutiet.
Oh, yeah.
Philippa. She's a rugby player, level four coach. You know, she won the World Cup in 2014 alongside Maggie Alfonsi and so on. And also Tamara Taylor. And basically, I raised that issue because the French players are semi-professional. They spend, you know, 75% of the time training, but 25% they still have their job.
Yeah.
You know, for instance, number eight, Gaëlle Hermé, basically, you know, she's a physiotherapist. I mean, she's an ergotherapist, but the closest translation I can come across is a physiotherapist. So you see, so they are lacking that professionalism. And I believe that the Welsh players are professional, and Italy as well.
Yeah.
So France is lagging behind, and I had a feeling that they were trying. There was some moment of brilliance with Sangsu and Ménager and Madosu as well, but they don't seem to be gelling, if you know what I mean.
Well, as you say, the thing is, people think when you're professional, it's all about training, and of course, you know, that's an important aspect. But the other aspect is, you get time to look after your body. You get time to recover from injuries. You get time to, as you say, I think the English team were down in Bayonne, sort of the beginning of the week. You know, they're getting around the area, having a bit of fun, relaxing. So come game time, you know, they're raring to go. They haven't had to work the night before or, you know, put the bins out. So, yeah. And at that level, this is the difference. You know, I have no doubt that France has the talent to challenge at the top. But until they go professional, I feel they're sort of being handicapped.
And we have some brilliant players. We got Laure Sansu, Madame Dupont.
Absolutely.
You know, with a scrum, absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
They have Marine Ménager, who scored the first try. Maëlan Philopon, Madoussou, you know, Gaëlle Hermet, who has, you know, the experience. There is something not gelling. Bernard Laporte was there watching the game, as well as Serge Simon and Raphaël Ibanez as well. And after the game, Laporte was very disappointed and he made his voice heard. So
something might get done then, yeah.
I'm hoping that might help. He did say you need to work on your weaknesses and so on, but maybe the French league as well need to open their eyes, and 5 months until the World Cup, and maybe find some money in their coffer to make them fully professional.
Yeah.
I wasn't the only one to spot, you know, the lack of neutrality from the Scottish ref, Holly Davidson.
You think she wasn't neutral?
Not at all. And this was spotted by...
You think she was biased?
This was spotted by Brian Moore as well, you know, when he was commentating in the live game. And also by Stephen Jones, who wrote an article in the Sunday Times. So he did say, and I'm going to repeat, you know, Stephen Jones' words, the referee tolerated so many English infringements near to the bench in line that it was staggering that only one player, Zoe Harrison, was sent to the sin bin. Okay. Davidson also missed a stone-cold penalty try to France in the first half, and she took a high degree of stick from the stands. She did. And also, again, back to the language skill, and I could see Gaëlle Hermet didn't understand that. Why do we have to have female rugby referees for female games. Let's have some male who can speak male referee can speak French, you know, for such a major game. But anyway, rant over. Next. So, Mike.
Yes.
News. Rugby news.
Wow, what rugby news is there? One bit of news has come out today is that there is very strong talk that the next year's, the 2023 Top 14 semi-finals will be held in Spain, in San Sebastian.
Oh dear. You know what happened in Spain? You know what happened? Not very good news for the Spanish league.
Yes. Another disastrous administration error, shall we call it, you know, for the second World Cup running. They've been booted out by World Rugby. It's just shocking. You know, the administrators there really should not have let this happen. It's sad beyond words, really. And it's, you know, it's ruining the game in Spain. They're so keen to progress and get onto the world stage, and this is really hampering their progress. They've got to wait another 4 years.
So what happened, you know, just for our listeners who haven't listened to the saga?
Well, they fielded an illegible player. I think it wasn't so much the fact, and, you know, don't quote me on this, it wasn't so much the fact that he was eligible on grounds of residency, but he forged his passport when the sort of administration details were given to the Spanish Federation. So it was, I think, from what I can gather, the main concern was the fact that he had forged his passport, and that really sort of made the offence much more serious than maybe it was. But there's still a lot to come out on that, and they still have the right of appeal. So, you know, it might not quite be over yet.
So another for Netflix, but yeah. So what happens is that Neuromedia is taking the place of Spain
at the moment. Yeah, and I think exactly what happened last time, wasn't it? I think.
So French lesson.
Okay, far away.
Far away. Yeah, I mentioned to you that, you know, that. I agree with Stephen Jones last week in his article in Sunday Times. You know, the win wasn't very pretty from the English team. You know,
they won't worry about that. I can tell you that. They won't worry how pretty it is.
They won 2 tries, you know, by a mole. So how do you say a mole in French?
Le mole.
Exactly. Which is not very original, but it's another Anglicism that's crept into the French language, but. But I'm sure, you know, there are some French words, you know, that have crept into the English as well, such as...
Yeah, croissant.
Exactly, croissant. Croissant, café crème, and so...
Exactly, ooh la la.
Rugby friend, I hope you enjoy our summary of the top 14 and what is going to be a very, very exciting few weeks. I don't know what will happen, Mike. I really don't.
Anything. Well, and that's the magic, isn't it? That's the magic of the top 14. But, and you know, before that, we've got to get Europe sorted. So plenty of rugby to enjoy during hopefully some nice weather and maybe a little... drink or two, perhaps. Who knows?
And Mike, so I would really love to read your book, you know, Brothers. What was it? Blues Brothers.
Yes.
Les Frères en Bleu. So what's been happening?
Well, this book is now going to be self-published, hopefully in the next couple of months. It's being proofread now and copy edited. So it's all systems go. I'm trying to get the book price as cheap as possible so people can afford it. It'll be in paperback form, so you can take it on the beach, take it to the cafe, take it on your commute, and I'll keep you informed all about it. But yeah, it's been a labour of love. There's some great stories in there, some great players.
So hopefully, you know, you being the co-host of Friendly Connections podcast will help you in finishing off your dream of having your first book about friendship self-published.
I've got a GoFund page out, and you can find it on via my Twitter site, which is at MP Sports Dragon. So if anybody can spare a few pennies to help get this printed, I'd be very grateful. And if you do, you will get your name printed in the book as well, just as an added thank you.
Unless you are anonymous in that case. Okay, on that note, you have a lovely weekend, Mike.
And you, yeah. Catch you all next week, everybody.
We'll be back on episode 2 with a wonderful and charming... and
Mike Pierce.
Eric Chon. Au revoir.
Au revoir.
Au revoir, bye.
La pendule fait tic-tac, tic-tic, les oiseaux du lac pic-pac, pic-pic, glou-glou-glou font tous les dindons, et la jolie cloche ding-ding-dong, mais boum, quand notre cœur fait boum, tout avec lui dit boum, et c'est l'amour qui s'éveille.